G'day wherever you may be around the world, and thank you for joining us once again. It is time for Treasures from the Tanakh on Truth to You. That's truth2u.org. I'm Jono, and joining me is Torah teacher Ira Michelson. G'day, mate.
Shalom, Jono.
Shalom, shalom. TorahThreads.com is the website, Ira, and also Torah Threads on Facebook. You can find Ira as well. And today we are in Job chapter 30, my friend.
Yep, we're actually the second part of the Mashal, the second Mashal. We have these Meshalim, you know, or what's Mashal is, you know, usually a proverb, but it can be a story and things like that. So this is the second part of the second Mashal.
The second of three parts, right? Continues on, this continues on from chapter 29. Job continues, he does continue into chapter 31 as well. We're doing chapter 30 today, and I think I need to go back and read the previous verses. I'm going to go from 25, verse 25, the last verse of chapter 29. I chose the way for them, I sat as chief, so I dwelt as a king in the army, as one who comforts mourners. But is the word that begins chapter 30. But now they mock at me, men younger than I, whose fathers I disdained to put with the dogs of my flock.
Right. So what do we see that's different here, as opposed to what we've seen previously?
But now.
Well, not just but now, but who is he talking to now? He's talking to the Tzira'im, the youngsters. And so now what he's doing is he's kind of changing the theme, excuse me, a little bit. There's what happens is that this Mashal now in 30 is broken down kind of into three different parts.
Okay.
And what he's doing is he's dealing with the youth now and talking about how even the youth now are mocking him, that it's not even the adults. Now the children, the younger people who he doesn't even, you know, whose fathers I rejected to set with my dogs of the flock, like the sheepdogs. He wouldn't even put them among his sheepdogs. You know, now these young people, you know, are mocking him as well.
Mm. Indeed, what profit is the strength of their hands to me? Their vigor has perished. They are gaunt from want and famine, fleeing late into the wilderness, desolate and waste, who pluck mallow by the bushes and broom trees roots from their food. What's that? Who plucked mallow?
Yeah, mallow. We talked about mallow some time back. I don't remember what chapter we were in, but you know, sometimes it's called saltwort or mallow. It's just a plant. It's, you know, these are certainly not typically the things that you would want to eat.
Oh, so these really are the last resort. This is a last resort food that he's talking about.
Yeah, and what he's doing is he's still speaking. You know, he makes mention of the fact that there are these young people, but now he's still talking about their fathers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's saying they weren't worthy to be even part of my sheepdogs, and this is the way they are.
This is the way that they are. And they were driven out from among men, and they shouted at them as at a thief. And they had to live in the clefts of the valleys, in the caves of the earth and the rocks, among the bushes. They brayed under the nettles. They nested. They were sons of fools, Ira. Yes, sons of vile men.
Mm-hmm. So if we go back to verse 7, when it says, between the bushes they bray, under the nettles or weeds they assemble. The word charul there, it's really hard to know the exact meaning. Big surprise. You know, in Eov and Job, but there is a similar reference to this in Proverbs chapter 24, verse 30 and 31, and it's similar in nature, talking about the type of people. In verse 30, it says, "I went by the field of the slothful, and by the vineyard of the man void of understanding, and lo, it was all grown over with thistles." The face thereof was covered with charulim, with nettles, and the stone wall thereof was broken down. So he's really making a mockery of them.
Sure. And that's one thing I was just about to point out. I mean, the fathers I disdained to put with the dogs of my flock, they were sons of fools. Yes, sons of vile men. They were scourged from the land. Doesn't sound very loving, does it?
Right, and now he's changing back. See, what happens is now he started saying about the young people mocking him.
Mm-hmm.
Now he describes their fathers. Now he's changing back, and now he's talking about the young people again.
But my point is that he seems to have no hesitation in describing people as such. And, you know, we could get in a lot of trouble for talking like that these days.
Well, you think I, you know, well, we want to go there.
In any case, and now
I'm accused of that. I'm accused of that often lately, Joe.
And now I am their taunting song. Yes, I am their byword. They abhor me and keep far from me. They do not hesitate to spit in my face.
Well, basically, he's saying that they speak behind my back.
Well, a little more than that. I mean,
no, and they spit on my face. Yeah. But you know, he's really talking about the fact that, you know, they don't even have the, you know, they don't even have the, you know, the strength to speak up, you know, to accuse him to his face. At least the, you know, his friends, you know, rebuked him.
Mm, mm. And why? Because and it tells us why from 11 onwards, because he and I do believe that he is God, because he has loosened my bowstring and afflicted me. They have cast off restraint before me. At my right hand, the rabble arises. They push away my feet and they rise against me in their ways of destruction.
Right. And so in verse 11, you know, when it talks about because he loosed his cord to afflict me, and then what do you have after that?
I've got, I've got because he loosed my bowstring and afflicted me, they have cast off restraint before me. So how do you understand that?
Okay. So what it actually says is, and the bridle or the reins from my face, they let loose. And so what he's beginning to do is he's beginning to make the argument that, and he has many times before, that he speaks about how just he was to those who are less fortunate. Mm-hmm. And he's making the argument that even those who are once bridled or connected to him are the ones that now assail him. Mm-hmm. The ones that he was, you know, nice to because they were less fortunate, like these fathers mm-hmm. That he's talking about. And their sons are now the ones who are coming against him.
Okay, so let me get this straight. So I've got because he, capital H, suggesting that he being God. That's the way you understand it, or you understand it differently from that?
Because right, no. I don't have a problem with that, but then it goes on, the second part of the verse just talks about they.
Yes, that's right.
Okay? It goes from he to they.
And so, it continues in 13, they break up my path, they promote my calamity. And this is an interesting thing. This is what I've got in the New King James, Ira. Tell me what you've got in 13. They promote my calamity, they have no helper?
Yeah, it actually, they break up my path, they further my calamity, even men that have no helper.
Ah, okay, that makes a little bit more sense. I looked that up in my new JPS, and in verse 13, I've got, they say it altogether a little bit different. They tear up my path, they promote my fall, although it does them no good.
Right.
Interesting.
No, I know what the JPS says.
Yeah,
but, so, you know, what I try to do is I look at the JPS, and then what I try to do is go through the verse for you in the Hebrew, you know, and try to give you as literal an interpretation from the Hebrew as I can.
Mm. Yeah, so it's...
But I have the same thing in the JPS. They tear up my path, they promote my fall, although it does them no good.
Interesting. It goes on to say, they come as broad breakers under the ruinous storm. They roll along. Terrors are turned upon me. They pursue my honor as the wind, and my prosperity has passed like a cloud. And now my soul is poured out because of my plight. The days of my affliction take hold of me. My bones are pierced, Ira, in the night, in me at night, and my gnawing pains take no rest. He goes on to, you know what this reminds me of?
What?
Psalm 22.
Uh-oh.
We get a little bit of this action in Psalm 22.
So let's go back for a minute.
Okay.
When we go back to verse 14, it says, it actually says, like, through a wide breach they come, under devastation they roll over. And what it does is, this comes from the root, this idea of rolling over actually comes from the root that can mean to fall upon. Mm-hmm. So it's this idea of, you know, falling upon him, which we see before. In verse 15, what it says is, terrors are turned toward me. And turned comes from a root that can mean to overthrow or defeat.
Mm-hmm.
And they pursue like the wind. Some people would certainly, you know, maybe talk about the spirit, you know, here. They pursue like the wind my dignity, and like a cloud my salvation passes.
Mm.
Because it says Yeshuati is the last word in the Hebrew. So it's talking about, you know, his salvation passes.
Mm.
And this could be a play on words. It could be seen as a play on words and an idiom, and that the Ruach, would normally be defining one's dignity or position, it's now the pursuer of his dignity like an enemy. Where typically the wind or the spirit would be, you know, something, certainly if you're talking about the spirit or God's spirit in him, that would be something that would normally show his position, which he had before, you know, when he had the favor of God. And now it's that very thing that's now pursuing him as an enemy and bringing terror upon him and overthrowing him and defeating him.
And now,
and then, of course, 16 and 17 speaks to what you're talking about.
And it does. I'm going to read it again. Now my soul is poured out because of my plight. The days of my affliction take hold of me. My bones are pierced in me at night, and my gnawing pains take no rest. It goes on like that. And just in Psalm 22, say from 14, I am poured out like water. All my bones are out of joint. My heart is like wax within me. It has melted within me. My strength is dried up like a potsherd. My tongue clings to my jaws. You have brought me to the dust of death. How's that? You have brought me to the dust of death. For dogs have surrounded me. The congregation of the wicked has enclosed me. Oh, my goodness. Here it is. This is Psalm 22:16. I'm going to read this from the new JPS for obvious reasons. And maybe we have time to quickly say why that's obvious. But Psalm 22:16 goes on, actually 17 in the Hebrew. Dogs surround me. A pack of evil ones close in on me like lions at my hands and my feet.
Mm-hmm.
I take count of all my bones while they look on and gloat. They divide my clothes among them, casting lots for my garments. In fact, Job goes on to say in verse 18, by great force my garment is disfigured. It binds around me as the collar of my coat. He has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. Very, very similar.
Yeah, very similar. And the interesting thing is that, you know, when we look at that word pierced, that's a very interesting word in the Hebrew. Have you ever done a study on that?
I have. My understanding is that it means to dig or dug.
Yeah, it can mean that in some places, and in other places, it actually has a completely different meaning. And what that meaning is, like for instance, we see in Zechariah 12:10, you know, which is another passage that people often bring up, and we see the concept of piercing there. Oftentimes, what we're seeing is the word in Hebrew that actually means to stab. And it has more to do with the action of in battle, for instance.
Now, is it? Can I just confirm that this is because you mentioned pierce, and you take that from Job 30 verse 17. My bones are pierced in me at night, because I didn't read the Christian translation of Psalm 22, but of course the Christian translation of Psalm 22:16 says they pierced my hands and my feet. But I've got a little asterisk there, Ira. And it, if I go down to the little tiny itsy-bitsy writing of 16, it says that following some Hebrew manuscripts, Septuagint, Syriac, Vulgate, Masoretic text reads like a lion.
Yeah. And so what ends up happening is where the whole pierce thing comes from, or, you know, what typically is in the Christian translation, typically comes from the Septuagint. You know, based on the dead, and there's some argument as to how the Dead Sea Scrolls read on that as well. But I've done some extensive research on that, and just like in this verse, where it says Laila atzamai nikar me alai v'orkai lo yishkavun, that v'orkai is the word that we have pierced, and really it can mean bore, but it actually means to gnaw away. And so what it's talking about is we have nikal and then we have the orkai. And so it's talking about this gnawing that goes on, and my gnawing does not rest. Mm-hmm. Okay. There's no rest of my gnawing. Now, I know how much you like this part. so I'm going to tell you what I think it's saying there. What I think it's saying there is that he's referring to those pesky little critters that are gnawing at his flesh, keeping him awake at night.
Because we're going to talk about that in a little more detail later in the chapter. But that's, just to be clear, I think that's a different word that's used. So this is now in Job 30:17, nakar.
It's definitely a different word than,
word. It's a different word for, so nakar in, but, and that's used, I think, eight times in the Tanakh. And hey, wow, this is interesting. We're talking about Job 30, verse 17. It's also used in Proverbs 30, 17. Isn't that interesting?
I didn't know that.
No, I just saw that then. Anyway, there's eight uses of the word, but it's not the right. same word. Okay.
So the reason why I brought it up, like the reason why I brought up 12:10 and why we're talking about 22 is because we need to keep in mind that there are several different words oftentimes in the Hebrew for similar type things. Mm. Or similar concepts that within the typical English translation or the Christian translation are going to be translated the same way. So you'll see something like pierced here in 30:17. You'll see pierced in Psalm 22. You'll see pierced in Zechariah 12. And we have three different Hebrew words, and we have to translate them the way the Hebrew translates and not the same way. So pierced in Zechariah 12 has to do with the idea of battle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you read in context Zechariah 12, it's talking about somebody who dies in the battle, and the way they die in the battle is by being run through with a sword,
mm-hmm.
stabbed with a sword, not pierced.
Mm-hmm.
The way it's typically the Christian translation goes.
Mm.
In the same way in Psalm 22, we have this idea of a mauling or a tearing like a lion would.
Yes.
At the hands and the feet. And then here in 30:17, rather than it being pierced, we actually have it as gnawing away or boring into
yes.
his bones, not most pierced certainly. The way it's translated. So that's really an important thing for the
very
listeners
important.
To understand.
Very important and a fascinating study. Something else I just noticed, Ira, this is uncanny, this another connection from Job 30, verse 17 to Psalm 22 is actually in verse 2. This is just a minor thing, but in Job 17, I'm reading from the King James now, my bones are pierced in me in the night season, and my sinews take no rest. The phrase in the night season is also used in Psalm 22, verse 2. Oh my God, I cry in the daytime, but you do not hear, and in the night season, and I am not, and am not silent, it says.
Right.
Interesting.
Anyhow. Right, because typically think about it. I mean, here, let me give you a kind of rubber meets the road example,
sure.
right? You know, I've been suffering, I've had back problems for years,
mm-hmm.
But somehow in the last, I want to say 3 months or so, even before I had my surgery, something cropped up on my left side, of my low back.
Mm-hmm.
And I just cannot find a place for myself to sleep at night.
Mm.
I'm a side sleeper. I can't sleep on my right side. I can't sleep on my left side. Within 30 seconds to a minute, I'm in excruciating pain. Mm. And so I've had to kind of learn to sleep on my stomach. And for the most part, you know, I get sleep here and there.
Mm.
The point is that it bothers me during the day, but I'm doing things, I'm moving around, I'm busy, I'm doing my thing. It's just in the night season, it's when you're resting, when
yeah.
you're supposed to be sleeping, when you stop, that's when you're crying out, because that's when the pain overtakes you. And this is what, you know, this is what this is describing.
Yeah, well, I hope
the difference between when we're busy during the day, where, you know, in biblical times, if this is, you know, David HaMelech, he's busy, he's sitting in the gates as an elder, or he's, you know, sitting on his throne as king and making decisions. But at nighttime, when everything's quiet, everybody's left, and now he's in his bedchamber. This is when we, you know, we have time to sit and think and to cry out to God in our afflictions.
Yeah, indeed. And I hope you find some relief to that sometime soon, my friend. It goes
well,
on.
I'm trying something new. So hopefully it'll work out. I'm going to try some acupuncture.
Hey, do you know what?
I'm going to have them gnaw at my bones with needles. Pierce me. I'm going to have them pierce me with needles.
I've never, ever tried it. I've had recently, because I have some back issues every now and then. And recently I tried, we're getting off the topic, but I have to say it. I tried something called dry needling. And believe me, I didn't put my hand up and say, hey, can we have a go at this? It was actually my physiotherapist that said, hey, we're just going to do some dry needling now, as if I didn't have a choice. And she was gnawing at my bones with these things. And surprisingly, we had some positive results from that. Even so, you know, next time I visited, I said, do you reckon we can try something else? Maybe yeah, not that.
Look, you know, my sister has had great results from it. And the truth of the matter is that I'm not one that wants to take medications.
Amen. But I've spoken to many people who have had acupuncture and have said that, that it's had very, very positive results.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yeah. Well, I hope it works for you, my friend.
Yeah, I appreciate that.
Keeps up to date. Verse 20 is, I cry out to you.
Wait a minute. What do you mean?
What do you mean?
We didn't do 18 yet.
Didn't I? By great force, my garments are disfigured. It binds me about as the collar of my coat.
Ooh, I love this one.
And he has cast me into the mire, and I have become like dust and ashes. What do you love?
Why are you going right past that?
I don't. It binds me about as the collar of my coat.
Right.
Hang on. Hang on. I'm going to go to my new JPS and see what this says. All right, 18. Hang on.
Well, let me read you what I have. In great strength, I disguise my clothing. Like the mouth of my tunic, it girds me.
Oh, right. So let me read it here. I've got, with great effort, this is the new JPS, with great effort, I change my clothing. The neck of my tunic fits my waist.
Yeah.
Whoa, yeah. Boy.
Right. So basically, that's what he's saying. This can have several renderings. Sure. As it relates to his being clothed in dirt and ashes, because that's what we see. You know, I become like dust and ashes in verse 19.
Yeah.
It could also be related to his skin and its ever-changing condition, that he's talking about his skin related to his clothing, that this is my clothing now, is my skin. And then finally, there's the perspective that you just brought, which is that he's speaking, and I believe that, in that Job, he's so wasted away that the collar of his tunic actually fits his waist.
Wow. Like, oh, my goodness.
Is that amazing?
Oh, it just gets worse and worse for the picture that's painted. And then it's not about to let up, too. I mean, anyway, we'll get there. I cry out to you, but you do not answer me. I stand up, and you regard me, but you have become cruel to me. With the strength of your hand, you oppose me. You lift me up to the wind and cause me to ride on it. You spoil my success.
All right, I'm going back to verse 20 because the same way you threw me one, I'm throwing one at you.
Go on.
Okay. And I have to bring it up only because this has always been a sticking point for me. And I know that you are a firm believer in a particular pronunciation of the name, the Tetragrammaton.
Mm.
And, you know, and certainly I was there at one point. Now, leaning towards a more orthodox lifestyle, I just don't believe that, you know, I like to use it that often. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I try to show reverence to the community by doing that. But here's why I bring this up, because in the Hebrew, that first word is ashava.
Mm-hmm.
And that word ashava comes from the root shua, to cry out. Why is this a sticking point for me? Because when we were all going through this process, when our friend Keith was going through his process with his book, when we were doing all this research, and I was doing some research with them, with Nehemiah and Keith, you know, on the name, and we have all of these different names that are being used now, not only for the Tetragrammaton, but for Jesus.
Mm.
You know, one of the things that came out was, there was this great outcry about the name, the pronunciation of the name, Yehovah. Mm-hmm. Okay. And why was there a great outcry about that? Because people who are ignorant about Hebrew were saying, well, you can't call him that because Hovah means destruction.
Yes.
Okay. And of course, that's ignorance, because anybody who understands the process of calling God by that name, not Hovah, but the pronunciation of the name that you use, that Nehemiah uses, that Keith uses, so forth, comes from the root to be, from Hayah. Hayah, Yeh, Vehoveh, who was, who is, and who will be. It's that concept of being always, okay? So we have Hey Yud Hey is the root of that name rather than Hey Vav Hey, which is Hovah. But anybody who's devoid of an understanding of Hebrew is going to make that mistake. And of course, there was this great outcry. Well, the funny thing about that is the same people who are the ones that cry out about this, pun intended, okay, are the very people that take the name Jesus, and most people accept the fact that his Hebrew name was Yeshua, okay, have changed it into Yahshua, okay, using a Yah at the beginning to represent God, okay, the Father, and then putting the Shua at the end of it.
Mm.
And what they're doing is they're being just as ignorant in producing that name, because now what they've done is they've produced a blasphemous name.
Mm.
And by coupling Yah with Shua, which is the verb for to cry out, they've basically produced a name that means God cries for help.
That's exactly what they've done. That's right. So true.
And who would want to serve a God that cries for help? Mm. Who is this God crying to help for? Mm. I mean, you know, the God of the universe, the creator that you and I serve, there is none besides him. Isaiah 43, 10 and 11.
Mm. Amen.
You know, there's nobody before me. There's no one after me. Mm. There's no savior beside me. Mm. Who would he be crying out to? Mm. And if that's what you want to do, if you want to limit your God to a God that cries to for help to somebody, I feel bad for you. So I just felt that we needed to, discuss that just for a minute.
Ignorant misrepresentation of the Hebrew language. There's no end to it, though, is there? There really is not.
But no, there is none. But, you know, it's my hope, you know, it's my hope that, you know, that somebody will hear this and realize that, look, this is not probably a good thing to do. Mm. I don't know how effective that is, because most people, when I try to talk to them about it, you know, their typical answer is, well, the Spirit revealed that to me.
Yes.
and then my next, well, what was the name of that Spirit?
Yeah.
Because certainly the Ruach, the Spirit of God, is certainly not going to reveal something to you that limits him in nature.
The imagination of their own heart, for the most part.
Right.
So, but that's very valid. And it goes on to say, now, verse 23, for I know that you will bring me to death and to the house appointed for all living.
Right.
How do you understand that?
Well, it's really speaking about the grave, Gehinnom, or whatever, that we're all appointed to a particular house. You know, we're all going to die. This is where all of us are going to end up, in this house that we've been appointed to.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So Sheol is referred to as a
yeah,
house.
Sheol or Gehinnom, you know.
Okay.
This idea of whatever you want to use for the grave.
Okay.
Sheol is probably a better one. I just, you know, Gehinnom came off the top of my head.
The ultimate dwelling place for all living is Sheol. Okay, fair enough. Surely he would not stretch out his hand against a heap of ruins if I cry out when he destroys it. I have not wept for him who was in. Have I not wept for him who was in trouble? Has not my soul grieved for the poor?
Right.
Come back to 24.
Yeah. So. Basically, what I think he's saying here is, you know, what I've translated this is, surely he will not send his hand in ruin if in destruction one cried out to him. So basically what I think Job is saying, based on everything that he's been saying so far, is that I've resigned myself to death and I mm-hmm. accept the judgment that God is bringing, but somehow I'm not entitled to mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Like,
and is he not saying, surely it can't get any worse than this, lest I die?
Right. Well, you know, which
and in, yeah, that's right. In some ways, and he has said as much, if I die, it would be better.
Right. And he's going on to saying, look, if I have not wept for the difficult day, and if my soul did not grieve for the needy, in other words, come on, didn't I take care of the needy and the less fortunate?
Mm.
And then in verse 26, when I looked for good, evil came, and I waited for light and darkness came.
Mm.
Like, instead of, I did all these things, and instead of being rewarded for my deeds, I'm being punished.
Mm, mm. My heart is in turmoil, and I cannot rest. Days of affliction confront me. I go about mourning, but not in the sun. I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help.
Right. So I got to stop here for a second, because you verse 27, I can't let you rest on that one.
My heart is in turmoil, I cannot rest. Days of affliction.
Yeah, it actually says, my belly or my bowels boil.
Oh, so it does.
And it really comes from this idea of that they're brought to a simmer.
Oh. So what I've got in the new JPS, my bowels are in turmoil without respite. Days of misery confront me.
Right. So I mean, imagine what it's been like, you know, if you ever had a stomach virus or something like that. You know, it's that idea of just having that. I mean, imagine what he's talking about. He's talking about all these afflictions, his body affliction, you know, my coat, the tunic of, you know, the neck of my tunic fits around my waist now. My, you know, my clothes or the skin that's hanging off of me. These things are gnawing at me, keeping me up all night. You know, my stomach, you know, just boils, you know, my bowels are constantly, you know, in turmoil, and I have no rest. I mean, you really can't imagine what he was going through, the suffering that he was going through.
And then it goes on in verse 29. This is a curious verse. I am a brother of jackals and a companion of ostriches.
Well, actually, owls would probably. Owls. It could be owls. It could be ostriches, or it could be owls.
Owls
make more sense.
It does.
Why do you think jackals and owls? Think about that for a second.
There is sort of are jackals and owls nocturnal creatures?
Well, but what does he say? What is the last person?
Scavengers,
last
perhaps?
Part of verse 28.
I go about mourning, but not in the sun.
No, the last part of the verse.
I stand up in the assembly and cry out for help.
I cry for help. And then I've become a brother of jackals and a companion to the daughters of owls. What do jackals and owls do?
They cry out.
They both cry out. They both, right. You know, jackals howl, owls screech, you know, so it's really a connection to that.
Yes. Okay, I'm with you there. I think
it is. He's like an animal that cries out the way the animals cry out.
Right. No, that makes sense. Owls. Okay. And I'm going to let you read these last two ones. The final two.
My skin is black upon me and falls from me, and my bones are burned with heat. Oh. And then it just says, my lyre it is to mourning, and my flute to the voice of weepings. And so this is the end of what they call the elegy portion of the Mashal.
Mm-hmm.
And an elegy is known as a mournful poem or funeral song in literature.
Mm-hmm.
And so here we have it. You know, next week we're in the final stage of the Mashal. And Job, once again, he goes back taking up his argument that his righteousness would require that he be relieved of his suffering. And yet it's not happening. And I'm excited about doing next week because... then we finally get to the mystery man.
Oh, that's true. We do finally get to the mystery man.
Michelle, we finally get to the introduction of our new character, mystery man, Elihu.
And I'm looking forward to that. But I am going to read it from the new JPS. It says, my skin blackened is peeling off me. My bones are charred by the heat. So my lyre is given over to mourning, my pipe to accompany weepers. Oh, I feel so sorry.
Yeah, he's already preparing for his funeral at this point.
He really, really is. And so Job does continue with his speech in chapter 31. We're going to get there next week. Thank you, my friend.
No, thank you. It's always a pleasure.
Once again, TorahThreads.com and TorahThreads on Facebook page. So make sure you find that on Facebook. Go there and like it. And Ira Michelson, thank you once again on Treasures from the Tanakh, chapter 31 next week. Dear listeners, until then, be blessed and be set apart by the truth about Father's Word. Shalom.